Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. Children often need help with the basic skills of expressing their emotions. Dr. Greg Popchek, who joins us every Tuesday, talks about this particular topic with us. He frequently hears from parents, even parents of teenagers whose children have anger issues that can explode out without warning. What can we do in this situation? How can we as parents help steward the passions of our children in virtue well and aid them and disciple them into developing those virtues necessary for the tempering of those passions in light of God's vocation for them and finally for the glory of God? I want to offer this as a word of consolation to everyone listening, especially parents. There is no challenge that befalls us today that has not befallen the body of Christ in the past. Saints and those who have gone before us have faced similar challenges, albeit sometimes in different circumstances, and all of them have found a way out in the gospel, in the perennial teaching of the Church. So the virtues and the grace of God become those perennial remedies that allow everyone to come into full flourishing and happiness. And what Dr. Greg Popchek and his bride Lisa do is they represent this truth in an applicable manner today, because this is a truth that is contained in the deposit of the Church's truth for the sake of the salvation of all. We go on from there to speak about a bloody anniversary. Today is the anniversary of one of the most haunting events in our history, the Tiananmen Square Massacre of 1989. I want to talk about the ideologies that led to this horrendous time of bloodshed, the way we've come forward as a global historical populace, but also how much work still needs to be done to ensure that such a travesty doesn't happen again. And then finally, we speak with Deacon Carl Cleveland. He was a loving, successful, faithful man until his world came crashing down, sentenced unjustly to prison. He lost everything he had, and now his daughter, Kitty, tells the story of his redemption. We talk about all of this after the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, June 3rd. It's the feast of St. Charles Lwanga and the Martyrs of Uganda. And today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. Family members of the man charged in the fire attack on Israeli hostage supporters in Colorado have been arrested by ICE. Multiple reports say the wife and five children of Mohammed Sabri Salman have been taken into custody. Salman is here illegally from Egypt. He faces federal and state charges after at least 12 people were hurt in Sunday's attack. The Trump administration is extending a long-running exemption for Chinese-made chips. The 25% tariff initially went into effect in 2019 and was set to expire last weekend, but it has been extended to August 31st. Tariffs would have been placed on a variety of products, including graphics processing units, which are chips at the heart of the artificial intelligence boom. The White House announced in April it opened a national security investigation into the effects of importing semiconductors, making the first step towards instituting tariffs under a provision known as Section 232. Not all Senate Republicans are on board with President Trump's big, beautiful bill. The multi-trillion dollar tax and spending package narrowly passed the House, and the Senate took up the measure this week, where Republicans can only afford to lose 3 votes. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul says he's a no unless the bill is changed to cut down the deficit more. And the U.S. Supreme Court is banning nearly a dozen baby names. According to the website usbirthcertificates.com, the name King, Queen, and Jesus Christ are illegal in the United States. New parents should also avoid naming their kids Santa Claus, Majesty, Adolf Hitler, and Roman numeral number 3, since those are not up to snuff with the U.S. government. Rounding out the list is Nutella, Messiah, the at symbol, and the number 1069. Each U.S. state follows its own set of name guidelines, but typically ban numerals, emojis, and special characters. From the AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Children often need help with the basic skill of expressing their emotions. Dr. Greg Popchick frequently hears from parents, even parents of teenagers, whose children have anger issues that can explode out without warning. What can you do in this situation? Greg joins us. Dr. Greg Popchick is the founder and director of CatholicCounselors.com. He and his bride, Lisa, also host More to Life, co-produced by Ave Maria Radio, Catholic Counselors, and EWTN. And it's a call-in advice program that airs weekdays at 10 a.m. And it's an outstanding program. They also produce the Catholic HOM app, an app that helps Catholic families thrive. Greg, thank you for joining us again. How are you?
I'm doing well. Marcus, thrilled to be here.
Always a joy to speak with you. I want to, and as usual, you are prophetic as well as pertinent. So let's talk about the fact that children have emotions that they don't quite know how to master in virtue and temper well. That's surprising to hear.
Well, I mean, it's funny that you say that because it shouldn't be surprising, but it is. Right? It catches us off guard. Right, you know, little Nutella Majesty has a temper tantrum, and we're just like, oh my gosh, you know, how dare you? Where did this come from? Right, and so we think, we'll take away a privilege, or we'll take away the phone, or we'll not let them do whatever, and that will fix it. Unfortunately, we have to remember that teaching good behavior and teaching emotional management, you know, are skills that have to be taught. You know, just like algebra. So, for example, you know, if your child was struggling with an algebra problem, you know, you wouldn't take away their phone to teach them algebra. You'd walk them through the algebra problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that the same kinds of techniques that can be used to teach math and science and spelling are the same sorts of things that need to be done to teach our children how to behave better and how to express their emotions appropriately. So, for example, you mentioned the Catholic Home app, the Catholic HOM app, and there have been a couple of questions this week. We do a lot of coaching on there. Parents ask questions, and we kind of give some feedback and walk people through things. And we had several parents on Home this week talk about a 9-year-old in one case, a 13-year-old in another case, who were having these really violent reactions whenever they were frustrated. The 13-year-old was throwing himself on the floor and screaming. The 9-year-old was you know, yelling at everybody in the house and stomping off and slamming doors. And, you know, and the parents were wondering, well, what should I do about this? You know, and so I asked, well, what have you done so far? Well, in the one case, you know, they took away the phone. In the other case, they took away video games. And I said, but what have you done? I mean, that's fine. That gets his attention. But what have you done to actually teach him what to do when he starts feeling that way? And they both said, you know, that's a great question. And so that's something that, you know, we really need to think about is how do we teach those virtues?
And so talking about teaching those virtues means disciplining them into the practice of those virtues, which means, as is true of the Catholic faith and parenting, there's this onus upon us to live that well that we may call it out in our children.
Well, sure. I mean, that's really important part of parenting is making sure that we're modeling, right? We can't
right.
give what we don't have. And so if we're struggling with our own emotions, that's something to work on as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that we have to have all of our emotional stuff together before we can teach our kids how to do it. It's something we can work on together. So, for example, one of the things I talked about on the Catholic Home app with these parents who were asking this question was what I call the wraparound technique. And what that really involves is not just correcting the child in the moment, but stepping back at a time when they're not engaged in that explosive behavior and saying something like, you know, I've really noticed that you have a hard time when you get frustrated with things and you really feel overwhelmed and that can't feel good for you. And, you know, I don't like it. So I'd like to really focus on this for the next couple of weeks and just really helping you learn some better self-control, mm-hmm. learn some, you know, some temperance, and let's focus on that. So let's, and then step one is where you identify maybe two or three situations where the kid hasn't handled their frustration well in the mm-hmm. last week. And you say, well, so first of all, tell me what stories were going through your head about that. Like when you lost the video game, you know, what was going through your mind, you know, when it happened? Oh, I was a loser. Oh, I'm never going to win anything, or you know, whatever. You want to try to identify what were the stories that triggered the reaction. And then you want to look at that and say, well, okay, were those helpful thoughts or were those hurtful thoughts? You know, is there a helpful way to think about that? Well, I mean, I don't know, I can learn from my mistakes. I'm just giving some examples here. Right? So, but you're identifying what's a more helpful way to think about it. All right, secondly, let's talk about how could you express that? How could you express that frustration in a way that isn't horrible and drives everybody away from you? Let's talk right. about that. And you identify, you know, what words could they use or what things could they do? Not, you know, not the silly kind of punch a pillow thing, but, you know, how could they express it appropriately to somebody that they're upset? You know, well, you could say, you know, I'm really frustrated about this, or I spent, you know, an hour trying to get to this stage and then all good went away. I forgot to save it and I'm really upset, you know, or whatever. But you're giving them the vocabulary to express it and even rehearsing it with them. Let's try that. Let's try it right now. Okay, so that's kind of the first part of it. So then what you're going to do then is every morning, maybe you have a little bit of a prayer time with your kid and you ask God for the grace to help them accept, you deal with frustration better. And then you say, let's think about the day. You know, what situations do you think might happen where you could get frustrated and really upset? So you're anticipating the problem.
Right.
If you could handle those things well, what would you want to do? What kind of helpful thoughts could you think about those situations? And what kinds of ways could you express, you know, your words or your behavior to, you know, to let people know that you needed help or you were frustrated? Let's think that through. And the point is you're trying to mentally rehearse the day and make them aware of times when they might need these skills.
Right.
Then later on, when the situation happens, let's say, you know, and they get upset, you can prompt them. Hey, what did we talk about? I know you're really upset right now. That's okay. Everybody gets upset. What do we talk about when these situations happen? How could you deal with that? And then at the end of the day, you check in again. It's like, well, you know, let's talk about some things you handled really well. You know, I saw you getting frustrated with that with your brother, and you handled that really well. And there was this other situation that you didn't handle quite so well. Let's talk about that. And these are all just like 5-minute check-ins. They don't have to be big, long lectures. In fact, the better if they're not. But what you're doing is you're doing a wraparound, right, where you're making the child more aware and mindful of what they need to change. You're giving them the skills to do it and helping them anticipate the problems. You're prompting them in the moment, and then you're reviewing. And that's how we learn anything. Right?
Right.
That's how we would learn algebra. That's how we would learn to spell something. That's how we learn any other concepts. These good teaching practices help us learn good behavior, too.
Right. Now, Greg, as you've shared all of this, I realize that there's a certain onus and expectation of capacity of reasoning and dialogue on behalf of the child as you're trying to engage this. This is a little more difficult to do for those who have younger children. So, but a lot of the wisdom that you've shared is applicable just in a slightly different manner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, so you know, with a younger child, say a child who is 6 or you know, 5 or 6 even, you know, you're going to need to give them more things, you know, as opposed to asking. You can ask the question, how could you handle that better? But then mm-hmm. you're probably going to have to offer some ideas. But it's the same basic process where you propose some ideas, you have them role play it and practice it with you. Then in the moment you remind them, hey, we talked about this. What did we say we could do? And then you kind of walk them through it. You know, it's a little bit more of you doing the heavy lifting, but it's the same exact process
right.
because it's how human beings learn anything.
Mm-hmm. I want to touch on a wisdom that you had shared some time ago that we found to be of tremendous fruit. This whole notion of downloading calmness or the heart rate from it as with a lot of your counsel, it's almost miraculous if we didn't see it working so naturally.
Yes, and so what you're talking about there is the need to kind of help the child calm down in order for them to learn, right? So, again, let's imagine the algebra. I had terrible math anxiety, right? So anytime I would have to sit down to learn to do a math problem, I would freak out, and I couldn't think, right? Well, kids, when they're learning how to handle their emotions, sometimes they're too wound up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than us getting upset and lashing out at them, the best thing to do is to say, hey, come here, buddy. And we hold them close and let our heart rate slow their heart rate down, our breathing slow their breathing down, so they can calm down enough to learn and deal with it.
Greg, thank you so much. Always a blessing to be able to speak with you.
Thank you, Mark. It's always a pleasure.
My guest, Dr. Greg Popchak, he and his bride, Lisa, host More to Life, and they're also the developers of the Catholic HOM app. Do download it. It's a tremendous resource for Catholic families. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. June the 4th marks the dark anniversary of one of the most haunting events in modern history, the Tiananmen Square Massacre of 1989. On this day, we remember not merely a political crackdown, it was the deliberate murder of innocence, hope, and freedom by the blood-stained hands of a totalitarian regime. The tragedy is not only that thousands of students were killed, but that the world, especially young people in the West, have all but forgotten it. Today, as young Americans call for socialism with the naivete of children playing with machetes and fire, the Catholic Church must be a prophetic voice again, crying out against the errors of Marx and Engels, the deceit of communism, the historical amnesia that plagues the post-Christian West, which is a source of tremendous concern. Tiananmen Square was not an anomaly. It was the logical fruit of Chinese communism. On April the 15th of that year, students and intellectuals gathered in Beijing's vast public square to mourn the death of Hu Yaobang. He's a reform-minded party leader who had called for greater transparency, democracy, and free speech. What began as a peaceful memorial quickly became a mass movement demanding human rights and political freedom. For 7 weeks, the world watched as hundreds of thousands gathered to plead, not for revolution, but for reform. The Communist Party responded with tanks. On the night of June the 3rd and into the early hours of June the 4th, the People's Liberation Army rolled into the square and opened fire. No warning, no dialogue, no compassion, no recognition of the dignity of the human person, just gunfire, tear gas, steel. The death toll is still unknown. The Chinese Red Cross initially reported 2,600 killed, but quickly retracted that number under pressure. Declassified British documents estimate at least 10,000 dead. I hope that number pierces our conscience. The image of the lone man in front of a tank has become an icon of moral courage. You can all Google it. But it's also a symbol of how evil responds to virtue. with mechanized violence. Communism cannot tolerate the free man, the virtuous man, because the free man has a soul. The collectivist state demands that the individual soul be replaced with collective slogans. The Tiananmen Square massacre was the bloody harvest of seeds sown decades earlier by Mao Zedong, who established the People's Republic of China in 1949. Mao's totalitarian rule led to the death of an estimated 45 million people during what he called the Great Leap Forward alone during that time. And that's a conservative estimate, a tragedy that dwarfs even Stalin's horrors. All of this flows naturally for Marxist ideology. Marx wrote, "Communism abolishes eternal truths. It abolishes all religion, all morality, instead of constituting them on a new basis." So what this new basis looks like is Tiananmen Square, or the Gulag, or the killing fields. Despite its rebranding as democratic socialism, the core tenets remain: the abolition of private property, class warfare, the reduction of the individual to a tool of the collective state, the rejection of transcendent moral law. The Catholic Church has continuously denounced this. No self-respecting Catholic can at once be a sympathizer of communism. Pius XI in Quadragesimo Anno declared, "Socialism, if it remains truly socialism, cannot be reconciled with the teachings of the Catholic Church because its concepts of society is utterly foreign to Christian truth." John Paul II himself battled the beast of the Soviet communism in Poland, and he warned, "The fundamental error of socialism is anthropological in nature. It denies the spiritual and moral dimension of man and replaces it with economic determinism and materialist control." And yet, despite all this, surveys show a growing number of young Americans viewing socialism favorably. A 2023 Axios poll reported over 50% of Gen Z respondents believed socialism is a better system than capitalism. This isn't because they've studied Marx, it's because they've never studied Mao. They chant for equity and communal ownership, oblivious to the bloodshed and the corpses left in the wake of every regime that tried to implement these ideals. They wear Che Guevara shirts, ignorant that Che personally ordered the execution of over 500 people in Cuba without trial. They praise the Chinese economy's efficiency, unaware that it is built on surveillance, censorship, the mechanization of the human person, organ harvesting, and, yes, slave labor. This historical ignorance is not accidental, it is cultivated. Our universities, overrun with progressivist ideologies, feed this deception to young minds starved of truth. Solzhenitsyn warned us, "The timid civilized world has found nothing with which to oppose the onslaught of a sudden revival of barefaced barbarity other than concessions and smiles." The Catholic Church remembers, and she calls us to remember. She remembers her martyrs in China, the priests tortured, the nuns raped, the lay faithful dragged into camps for refusing to deny the Pope. She remembers the 120 Chinese martyrs canonized by John Paul I in 2000, whose blood cries out with that of the students in the square. She remembers the underground bishops who remained faithful despite decades in labor camps, and the families torn apart for attending clandestine masses. She remembers the Eucharist celebrated in secret, the rosary whispered under threat of death, the crucifixes hidden in cellars. She remembers because the Church is not a political actor, but a perennial guardian of truth. Benedict XVI reminded us, "The Church cannot and must not remain on the sidelines in the fight for justice. But justice requires memory. It requires telling the truth about history. And the truth is this: every single time socialism is implemented in its full ideological form, it ends in bloodshed. Not sometimes, not occasionally, always." Why? Because socialism is a lie. It lies about man. It lies about freedom. It lies about God. And wherever the lie reigns, truth is crucified. Marx, the father of modern socialism and communism, made clear violence was not a regrettable consequence, but a necessary instrument of revolutionary transformation. In the Communist Manifesto, he and Engels declared, The communists disdained to conceal their views and aims. They openly declared that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. In other words, he admitted the revolution was not meant to be political alone. It was totalitizing, and the path to it is paved with the skulls of those who stand against it. It is paved with coercion and blood. Lenin, Marx's zealous successor, was even more explicit. In The State and Revolution, he said, "The state is a specialized organization of force. It's an organization of violence for the suppression of some class." Class war for him necessitated terror. He wrote to the Bolsheviks in Penza, instructing them to hang no fewer than 100 known kulaks, rich men, bloodsuckers, he called them. He didn't call for dialogue. Stalin, Lenin's heir, institutionalized terror. Under his regime, bloodshed became bureaucratized. He reportedly told Churchill during World War II, "The death of one man is a tragedy, but the death of millions is a statistic." These are not misinterpretations of socialism. They are its historical fruits. The Christian worldview offers the only real alternative. Socialism says man is an animal shaped by class struggle. The church says man is made in the image of God. Communism says religion is the opiate of the masses. Christ says, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." It's no coincidence wherever communism rises, Christianity is the first to be attacked, because Christ is the only real threat to totalitarianism. A soul in grace is the greatest danger to tyranny. Today, we must never forget the young students at Tiananmen Square. They were not asking for revolution, they were asking to be treated as human beings. They were appealing to conscience, to reason, to justice, and they were met with tanks. Mourn the dead of Tiananmen. Remember the martyrs of China. Resist the seductive slogans of socialism and teach our children to do the same. Never forget. Never allow the same tyranny wearing a different face to rise in the free world, in the West, and especially here in the United States of America. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by a gift from our day sponsor, Bernadette Mikowski, who is praying for her sister, Christine Schluter, who passed away 10 years ago today. Christine was a loving mother, wife, sister, grandmother, aunt, and friend to all. We all miss her loving, gentle, and kind spirit, and we pray that she's happily enjoying her eternal salvation.
Catholic Charities of Shiawassee and Genesee counties have been providing health and creating hope since 1941. It's the generosity of donors that allows them to provide necessary services such as their warming center, which provides refuge and comfort to thousands in our community. They also offer hot meals in their soup kitchens and help families make ends meet in their community closet. Even the smallest donation makes a meaningful difference. Join us in their mission by giving a donation at CatholicCharitiesFlint.org.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
On the next Epiphany.
Hi, Vanessa Denhagarmo here. It's time for Parish of the Week Wednesday. We'll check in with Father Bob McKay from the Church of the Divine Child in Dearborn. They're celebrating their 75th anniversary this month. Also, Father Aaron Williams will be with us. He's the priest consultant for a new movie called The Ritual.
Epiphany, weekdays at noon on Ave Maria Radio.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck.
Without the light that comes from Christ, we walk in darkness. And darkness is a way of describing this fallen world in which we don't know why we're here even. We can't touch meaning because we ultimately can't see God, and we can't be satisfied because we were made for God. We were made as this entire creation. The whole cosmos was made to the glory of God. It all exists to reveal the glory and the majesty, the beauty, the complexity, the creative love and power of God. And all of it gives praise to Him, except for fallen angels and rebellious human hearts. We're made literally to live for the glory of God, to worship Him, to give thanks to Him. That's what heaven is. It's not just a big prayer meeting, but it is the full celebration of free souls and creatures just overwhelmed by the majesty and beauty of God. And we're sharing in it. We're not just watching it like we do on a movie, that when it's over, it's over. We're in it. We're sharing in the life. And it's total and absolute fulfillment. We can't hardly even imagine what that's like. The best we can do in this world is to have some measure of distraction or something that makes me feel good temporarily. Or temporary goals that we kind of have hope in. Those intermediate goals are good goals, but they don't solve the big problem. They don't produce genuine heart that brings peace to the soul and transformation.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth, weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Deacon Carl Cleveland was a loving, successful, faithful man when his world came crushing down. Sentenced unjustly to prison, he endured the loss of all he had, his reputation, home, career, and family. From this tragedy arose a story of radical trust in God's divine mercy. We're joined by his daughter Kitty to tell the story. She is the author of From Prison to Paradise, A Story of Radical Trust in God's Divine Mercy, published by the Word Among Us Press. Kitty, thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. It's a delight to be with you this afternoon.
It's a delight to have you. I want to say that your love for your father comes out in virtually every page in this book, and I can only imagine how painful it was to pen some of those harrowing times, but I'm glad that you put his story to paper.
Thank you so much. It was really a labor of love, and I have to say I was writing the book for about 10 years, and I was delaying reading my father's letters that he had written from prison, because I knew it was going to bring back a lot of the more painful parts of that story. But when I shared the whole testimony at a retreat with Immaculate Yuli Bagiza, she said, "This has to be a book. And if you get it to me by January, I'll write the foreword." So that was kind of the little nudge that I needed to delve into the letters. And they were honestly, it was painful, but beautiful and healing and inspiring. And so thank you for that.
So I want to ask you, in the interest of our listeners who most likely don't know the person of your father and his story, would you mind starting where you start in the book with his legal practice, his prowess in the courtroom, and eventually what paved the way to his unjust incarceration?
Sure. Well, my dad, we're from New Orleans, and he came from an old New Orleans family, and his dad had practiced law and died when he was in his 50s from cancer. And so my father was a lawyer, and his dream was for all six of his daughters to be lawyers with him. He was going to call the firm Carl's Angels. I was the only one who took the bait, so I was practicing law with him, and he was a trial lawyer, kind of larger than life, loved a jury, loved to tell stories, and was also a Catholic deacon.
Mm-hmm.
He'd gone through a profound conversion after attending a Curcio in the 1980s that led to his becoming a deacon. And so he loved giving homilies. He almost always ended up crying, but also had us laughing. And that's much the way he did things in the courtroom as well. And he'd had a good deal of success as a trial lawyer, and thought that that's how his life would continue. And then the FBI showed up. So that that was in the mid-1995. Mm-hmm. And it happened, so happened that that was the very day I left my father's law practice to go back to school to get a master's in counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And I just discerned on a retreat very strongly that I was meant to leave. And so that was, of course, confirmed when I called the office and they said the FBI is here. So the bottom line was we had a client who was being accused of bribing state politicians to vote for legislation favorable to his business.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of dragged our law firm into it. And it's a miracle I was not indicted. I did about 95% of the work for this client at that point, his contracts and things like that. And my dad really just did the tax advice. And so, the FBI and the U.S. attorneys basically told my dad what they needed to hear from him, and gave him a long list of politicians that they were really after. But
mm-hmm.
he didn't know any of those people, and he didn't have any information to share. And so they made an example of him and indicted him on 17 different counts. And it was six defendants tried together, a really complex trial that lasted the whole summer of 1997. And then he ended up being convicted and sent to prison for 10 years and ordered to pay $1.5 million in assets that he had never received.
Mm-hmm.
It was devastating in every way. Yeah.
You know, the entire narrative prior to the incarceration in the book shows him to be a deeply involved, affectionate, loving father, one who modeled for you and your sisters a very virtuous way of living while still being a Christian in the marketplace, if I may borrow that adage. And in fact, I was particularly touched by that story of while he was preaching the homily, he announced that he gave the yes to your then boyfriend, now husband. One part wasn't clear to me. Did you not know that he had given the yes before that homily? Was that the first time you were hearing it?
Oh, that was the first time he was giving his yes. So for those of you who haven't read the book, this is like classic Carl Cleveland. And my dad had many great qualities. He was not entirely a saint, so I don't want to paint him as like too glowing a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Prison did a lot for my dad in terms of growing some virtues that he wasn't particularly strong in yet, but especially patience. But yeah, so he never missed the opportunity for a good homily. And when my boyfriend asked his permission to marry me after we'd only been dating for 3 months, and it was only the second time my dad met him,
mm-hmm.
he said, "We'll talk." And that was on a Saturday night. Sunday morning, he was giving the homily. I was singing in the choir, and the homily was about the Annunciation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he said, "I had the opportunity to give my own fiat last night, as a matter of fact, when my daughter's boyfriend asked my permission." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, he is not doing this in front of the entire church." But yeah, he was. And he said, "So Kitty, the answer is yes." And then everyone started clapping, and I was mortified.
Gosh,
but typical of my dad.
Kitty, you know, I thank God that I'm not your father's son, because if that had happened to me, I would have sunk. I would have, sunk into some hole somewhere. But it seems like you took it with grace and joyful fervor.
Oh, yeah, and now we're married 30 years, so, it all worked out.
So let's dive into greater detail about January of 1998. It's very clear that things are not looking good legally, and your father's going through a real spiritual turmoil. This man who had, in his own way, strived to be faithful to the Lord, was wondering where the Lord was in his suffering.
Yeah, well, January of 1998 was when he arrived in prison, and it was a true dark night of the soul, as he described it. And one of the gifts that my dad left behind were these letters. He wrote a monthly letter from prison, mm-hmm. newsletter that went out to like over 1,000 people. My mom would type it up and then email it out. And so he chronicled his experience every month and shared very candidly about this dark night of the soul and how he was despairing, But then he started reading the Psalms, and he realized, frankly, we all suffer. It is part of the human condition. And that David himself, as he wrote these Psalms, was suffering exactly what my father had gone through and was going through, and that it's part of the human experience, but that God does not abandon us. He's faithful, even though it may not feel that way. That is where our faith grows, right? When we make the act of faith, of hope, of love, and I believe in your love to me, and I believe with all my heart that you are good, God, and that you care for me. And so it was very much my father learning how to live in the present moment and to entrust his case to his lawyers, you know, and all the future possibilities and any past mistakes to God's mercy. But really, you know, he was just holding on and also looking for purpose. You know, he started finding jobs there in prison that gave him some sense of accomplishment. And he had a scheduled routine every day, so he stayed busy. As soon as he woke up at 5 o'clock with his first rosary and, you know, had a prayer routine to keep, you know, throughout his whole day. And exercise. He lost 50 pounds.
Yeah,
while he was in prison. I hear your music there, yeah. So if you want, I can pick up on the other side.
Yep, we will. We are talking with Kitty Cleveland, the author of From Prison to Paradise, a story of her father, Carl Cleveland's radical trust in God's divine mercy despite unjust incarceration. Stay tuned. We will continue on the other side of the break. I'm Marcus Peter.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Beckway Door is a top provider of garage doors as well as home entry, patio, and storm doors. Locally owned since 1978, we give free, no-pressure quotes at prices 20% lower than most competitors and often provide same-day service for garage door repairs. Mention Ave Maria Radio for 10% off the replacement or service of your garage door or the installation of new exterior doors. Visit BeckwayDoor.com. That's BeckwayDoor.com.
When women are faced with an unexpected pregnancy, Arbor Woman Health offers free medical-grade pregnancy tests, counseling, and same-day ultrasounds. But they can't protect the sacredness of life without your ongoing support. Join them for their 2025 Flourish Fundraiser Dinner on Friday, June 13th at 5:30 p.m. at St. John's Resort in Plymouth. Visit arborwoman.com to purchase tickets or become a corporate sponsor today.
Remember to take a minute this week to thank a priest you know for all the blessings he shares through his vocation. Let us encourage them and express our gratitude for all of their sacrifices. Saying something like, "Thank you for baptizing our children." Nominate your priest at thankyouforyourpriesthood.com. A new contest every month through September 2025, brought to you by Diocesan, your Catholic advertising and communications company.
When one has real love for another, not mere emotional attachment, that one moves out of the isolation of his own existence to know the other's thoughts, emotions, sufferings, and even beyond this, to know the other's reality. The illusion, though, is that loving is a natural capacity, easily and automatically acquired. This is an illusion reinforced by the popular concept of falling in love, a term implying a complete lack of volition. Fundamentally, though, the notion of love's facility is not true, for the whole process of coming out of ourselves is not easy or automatic. Now, especially, in our climatically controlled, screen-dominated worlds, we exist within our own spaces, within our own minds, and those who are the most difficult to see become the most difficult to love. GuadalupeWorkers.org.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm speaking with Kitty Cleveland, the author of From Prison to Paradise. It really is the spiritual journey of Kitty in light of her father, Deacon Carl Cleveland's unjust incarceration and eventual release and exoneration. So, Kitty, I want to pick up with a sentiment that you had shared before the break, which I picked up in my reading as well. Your father very clearly, from the moment he voluntarily surrendered himself to the Pensacola Navy Prison, started searching for meaning. And one of the ways in which he did this was he tried to put himself to seek out meaningful work for a sense of accomplishment and simply to be of service, simply to be of productive service, which is a very commendable thing. It speaks to virtue in that regard.
Well, thank you. And I think, too, it speaks to the human heart, you mm-hmm. know, and to all of our desire that God has placed in us to have meaning in our lives and purpose and to make a difference. And so he was looking for ways to do that even in prison. And I know that he counseled a number of men while he was in prison and participated in the Insight program, which was kind of like Curcio there in the prison. And it was life-changing for many of the prisoners there as they were able just to kind of share their hearts and their regrets and their longing for God and encounter really unconditional love. So that was a really special ministry that he found. And, of course, he also got involved in all kinds of, you know, operating heavy machinery, which mm-hmm. he absolutely loved. And tractors and things that make lots of noise and smoke, he said, are truly soul-satisfying. and then we were really just waiting for the appeal. You know, we knew once the Fifth Circuit looked at the details of the case that he was coming home. And so we were just waiting, you know, waiting and waiting, and finally, like a year and a half into his imprisonment, we finally got word that all of his convictions were affirmed. Mm-hmm. Not a single one was reversed. Excuse me. And so for me, that was really the darkest hour. I started keeping a daily holy hour at that point, trying to make sense, you know, and just really pressing in. And then wrote a song for my dad during that time called Surrender. The call on my life was really for music ministry and to start recording music. So that was the first song that I wrote was for him. Really, that had so many of the gems that I had learned from him during this trial and his incarceration. And 2 Corinthians 12 also, especially verse 9, became a theme in my weakness, you know, the power of God is perfected. And so that was sort of, it was mysteriously given to him a couple of weeks before the trial started. It ended up being the reading at Mass, the day that he was convicted. Mm-hmm. It was in the first letter he received in prison that, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And that was so opposite of my dad's personality, which was kind of a take charge, choleric, you know, and full systems go, played hard, worked hard, all of that. And so the idea of weakness, because he wanted to be strong, but he was strong in Christ and his powerlessness. He came to really understand that. And then when we lost the appeal, ironically, he found his greatest peace at that point because he just surrendered. He knew that he had another 7 years in prison and when he let go of his expectations of, you know, what he thought his life was supposed to look like, and just accepted reality on its own terms and asked God, please just give me peace. The Lord answered that prayer. He said he felt like he was enveloped in a grace bubble in the midst of hell, and had really, truly profound peace, even in the midst of prison. So that was a huge lesson I learned from him. And I got to work on my first CD, and then was invited to be on EWTN. And then we got word that the U.S. Supreme Court wanted to hear his case. And the original trial judge set a hearing that's sort of a matter of course as to whether or not he can come home while we wait for that hearing. But she had decided everything against us up to that point. We weren't holding our breath. But then she scheduled the hearing on Easter Thursday, between Easter Sunday and the very first official Feast of Divine Mercy in the year 2000, the great Jubilee year when St. Faustina was going to be canonized. And I had a real devotion to her. I had been reading her diary during the trial, and I had almost a mystical vision of the Divine Mercy while they were reading the guilty verdicts. It kind of got me through that darkest hour. And then she set the hearing on Easter Thursday at 3 o'clock, the hour of mercy, and at 3:30, she ordered him released from prison after, 2 years and 4 months in prison, pending the hearing with the Supreme Court. And then my dad, I mean, we just had incredible celebrations. And then I was on EWTN with Jeff Cavins a few weeks later and sang that song for him for the first time. And so we had all of this jubilation, but it was tempered because we knew that he might have to go back to prison. And then in November of that year, the United States Supreme Court unanimously reversed his convictions.
Yeah.
So he was home. And he didn't have to pay all of the money, which was going to mean my parents lost their home and all of that.
Yeah,
so it was quite a journey. And that wasn't the end of it, but that was a big chunk of the book, as you know.
Yeah.
Thank you for reading it, by the way. I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem at all. It's kind of a gripping narrative. It's not a page-turner in the way a Crichton novel would be, or, you know, a Jeffrey Archer novel would be. It's more of a spiritual memoir, and I think that was your intent in writing it that way, because you really get a sense of his heart. One of the lines that really stuck out to me, and perhaps the first, it's in the first third of the book, it's how he says, "Do not weep for me. This is a natural part of my journey with the Lord, and how much God must love me for allowing me to endure the suffering." Gosh, I'm reading that line thinking, I don't know what universe your father comes from, first of all, but I also don't know how much grace it would take for me to get from where I am to be able to say that.
You know, he was reading St. John of the Cross at that point, and I think he was quoting John of the Cross, and that when God really loves a soul, he sends great suffering. And my dad's reply was, "Well, then God must really love me a lot," right?
Yeah.
So it was a tremendous grace that he was given. And that, you know, the other thing for me too, just for your listeners, in case any of them are accompanying someone who's really going through a lot of suffering, because, you know, so often we would just gladly take their place, right? We'd rather trade places with them, because that feeling of helplessness is excruciating. And so I almost felt like I had an obligation to stop living my life, like to not experience joy, because it felt almost disloyal in a way. And I told my dad that, and he said, "Please, Kitty, for the love of God, live your life, have joy, because it adds to my burden knowing that you're suffering like that." And so that was really a gift to me. And so I just want to pass that on as well to your listeners, that it adds to the burden of our loved ones if we stop living and stop, and, you know, experiencing joy, because God wants us to have joy in the midst of all of it, even in the midst of profound suffering.
So we're running out of time in this segment, Kitty, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to share about the wondrous things that God was doing in your life, you know, your musical career, your stage performances, the fact that one of your sisters got engaged and eventually married. And so just share about how the Lord was working in your family while your father was undergoing his time of incarceration.
Well, for me personally, I was such a daddy's girl, and it was heartbreaking for him when I left his law practice, but I knew it was really the first decision I made independent of my dad, mm-hmm. and to follow God's lead when I left to get a master's in counseling and to work on the music. And I knew I had to follow God's call in my life. And so that ended up being, and then it, ironically, when he was released from prison, we were working together again. He was sharing his testimony, and I was giving concerts. And so it was in a totally different, unexpected way. But and since then, and my dad, of course, I shared the story at the end of the book that he contracted cancer and mm-hmm. ultimately died when he was 63. And he would have died in prison if we hadn't had our miracle through St. Faustina's intercession, I believe. But it was a beautiful, holy death. And since my dad promised he would continue to help me do what I do, which is essentially just Catholic evangelization through music and testimony, and now this book. And I formed a nonprofit right before COVID to give all, I have 10 CDs, and to give all my music away for free, mm-hmm. Especially to the poor, the sick, and the dying. It was not my good idea. It was literally like it dropped into me. Completed. I knew what I needed to do. It was kind of a mandate from heaven. And so we ended up getting these little players with all of my music, the songs of just healing and consolation and prayer, into the COVID wards, into the ICUs, into the nursing homes where people were dying alone. And so I know my dad had a hand in that from the other side of the veil. I really believe that.
Well, Kitty, it has been a tremendous joy connecting with you. It's been a blessing to be able to go through this narrative with you. And so, very quickly, how can people get in touch with you or find out more about what you're doing?
The easiest way is just to go to my website, which is my name, kittycleveland.com. So it's K-I-T-T-Y, Cleveland, like Cleveland, Ohio, .com. And the other neat thing is every weekday morning, 5:45 a.m., I lead the rosary with new meditations every day on YouTube and on Instagram. And they can find that on my website, too.
Well, thank you very much, Kitty, for making the time and for sharing the story with us.
Oh, it was my delight. Thank you for having me. God bless you.
My guest, Kitty Cleveland, author of From Prison to Paradise, a story of radical trust in God's divine mercy. Until next time, I'm Marcus Peter.